Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Wednesday, March the 15th, and welcome to our commentary. Well, we've been talking in some of our last videos and commented on some of our recent posts about the situation in Mexico with President López Obrador of Mexico criticizing the United States, or not the United States, but Senator Graham of South Carolina for suggesting last week, following the death of those two Americans on the border, for suggesting that we should name the cartels as terrorist organizations. And that, of course, prompted a very quick response from the president of Mexico, a response that included actually saying that he might consider telling Mexican Americans in the United States not to vote Republican. I cannot remember the last time that a Mexican president got that involved in American politics. Certainly, you know, it's not something they like. I mean, Mexico has always maintained a position that you don't get involved in other countries' politics. But obviously, in this case, the president of Mexico said he would consider doing so. Anyway, that was a couple of days ago. Now we have a new story, and I've got a post coming out about this on Thursday morning. Now we have a story that Senator Menendez, who is a Democrat from New Jersey, has come out quite critical of what López Obrador, or President López Obrador, is doing in Mexico with respect to national security or security against the cartels. I mean, he's coming out saying, hey, you're not doing your part here. You're failing. I mean, he's not saying exactly those words, but that's what he means. And now, just for the sake of fairness, Senator Menendez does not agree with Senator Graham that the cartels should be named, terrorist organizations. He doesn't support that. But he does believe that Mexico is not doing a good job with respect to handling these cartels, or for that matter, handling its security matters. So he came out pretty strongly. And, you know, what exactly is the president of Mexico going to do now? Is he going to call on Mexicans not to participate in the elections up in the United States and not vote Democrat or not vote Republican? I don't know. I don't know what he's going to do, but he's now getting it from both sides. He's getting it from a Democrat, Menendez of New Jersey, and he's getting it from several Republicans. Most likely, you're probably more familiar with Senator Graham and what he said. Now, what the senator of New Jersey, Menendez, is saying that, you know, we should give them more technology and more weapons so that they can fight the cartels. The problem is that we're doing that already. I mean, we started doing that back in 2007 with something called the Mérida Plan, which is a plan negotiated by President Bush back in 2007. This would be the second President Bush, and with President Calderon, who was president at the time. And remind you that President Calderon really went after the cartels by using the military and really going after their sources in Mexico and putting thousands of Mexican soldiers on the streets and in certain parts of the country to battle the cartel. So I thought we were already providing Mexico with billions of dollars of military aid and assistance. Look, if we have to do more, I don't have a problem with that. But I think this is more complicated than simply giving weapons to Mexico, or giving them, you know, more high intelligence stuff so they can monitor the activities of these cartels. I think they've got those weapons already. It's a question of using them and using them properly. You know, I go back to the point we've made many times before, and that is that President Trump was able to sit down with the president of Mexico and figure something out. And as a consequence of those negotiations, the border was in better shape than it is right now. And the president of Mexico was willing to cooperate by putting some troops on the ground, certainly putting some troops in the southern border to stop some of the caravans. So I think what President Trump was doing was working. What President Biden is doing is not working. And the reason it's not working is because the border is wide open. And, you know, unless you're willing to put strict border restrictions and you're willing to tell Mexico, look, you have to work with us and make it very clear that you will, that there will be consequences if they don't work with you. Unless you're willing to do that, I don't think Mexico has any interest or any incentive to cooperate with you. There is a story out there, many people have repeated this, that President Trump actually threatened to name the cartels as terrorist organizations, and López Obrador said, no, don't do that, and then turned around and worked with President Trump. Look, I don't care what we do, but we have to do something to stop the violence in Mexico and, of course, overflowing into the United States. Mexico also has an incentive here to do something because this is going to have an economic impact. You know, if we keep hearing about travel warnings and don't travel here and don't travel there, that is going to have an impact on their economy because they obviously depend a great deal on tourists and so on who go to Mexico. So we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. But the president of Mexico is now getting it from both sides. He's getting criticism from a Republican, and he's getting criticism from a Democrat, Senator Menendez of New Jersey, who, by the way, has always been very active in national security matters. So this is an area that he's always been involved in. Well, maybe you heard the story. This is one of the most ludicrous stories that President Joe Biden has told us. You know, he's got this incredible ability to tell stories. And, you know, for a politician, it's a good thing to tell stories. Ronald Reagan was very good at telling stories, but he would always tell the story differently. He wasn't making up things about his background. He would make stories to make a point or say a joke or whatever. But in this case, the latest coming from President Joe Biden, you know, so he was on a television interview. And the interviewer asked him about his position on same-sex marriage over the years. If you know anything about Joe Biden's senatorial career, is that he was always in favor of marriage being between a man and a woman. And now all of a sudden, of course, he's, you know, he's preaching all kinds of same-sex marriage and promoting abortion and everything else. So they asked him, you know, what happened? And he said, well, when he was 18 years old, he was being dropped off in school by his father. And he saw a couple of men, well-dressed men, kissing in a car. So he looked at his father and kind of asked his father, what's this? And his father said, Joey, that's what the father always calls him, Joey, that's love. And apparently, Senator or President Biden said that that was the turning point in his career regarding gay marriage. Well, if that was the turning point, he kept it from us for about 50 years, because he never told this story before, never said anything like this before, and was always, again, if you follow his career, was always a very strong supporter of marriage being between a man and a woman. So, you know, I don't know. Sometimes I wonder how he gets away with all these stories. You know, we have a congressman from New York. They want to tear him down because he made up stories about his background. Well, I'm not defending the congressman from New York, but my goodness, this is the president of the United States, and he's always making up stories about his past and this and this and this. And then this one about these two men kissing being the moment that he became a supporter of same-sex marriage. If that was true, then he held that information from the rest of us for 50 years because nobody had ever heard that story before. And as I say, for years, he was a strong defender of something called the Defense for Marriage Act, which was a law that was passed, I think, in the Clinton administration, supporting the idea that marriage was between a man and a woman. So Joe Biden and his fairy tales and his stories, it's pretty remarkable, to say the least. You know, we keep seeing all this polling data. We keep seeing all this polling data between Governor DeSantis and President Trump. I personally don't think you want to take any of that very seriously because we really don't know what we're going to be talking about in 6 months or 9 months. And I just think it's too early to get involved in any of that. Now, as far as President Trump, I think he should have waited, frankly, longer to say that he was a candidate. I think he should have waited and maybe started talking about it in the summertime. in terms of Governor DeSantis, I think he's following the right policy. And the right policy is, he's got a brand new book. I guess he's going around talking about his new book. And he's talking about what he's doing in Florida. He's not talking about the presidency or running for president. He's simply talking about what he's doing in Florida. And that, I think, is the right approach. I think DeSantis is following a very smart strategy here. And he's kind of keeping a distance from anything that President Trump says about him or in general. So I think DeSantis is doing the right thing. But at the same time, I wouldn't get really worked up yet about this, all these polls this far in advance. There's a lot of time left, lots and lots of time left between these two men. Assuming Governor DeSantis runs for president, I have a funny feeling that he is, but he's doing the right thing by holding back as much as possible. A couple of things on this day in history. 1972, the movie Godfather was released on this day, so that makes the movie 51 years old. It was a great movie. It's still a great movie. I enjoy watching it whenever it comes on. I've seen it, I don't know how many times, but it's just a great movie. And the good thing about The Godfather is that every time you see it, you seem to pick up something new because it's a long story. It's a complicated story. And, every time I watch it, I pick up something new. So I guess that's one of the reasons why so many people watch it over and over and over again. And we say happy birthday, happy number 80. To Mike Love of the Beach Boys. Mike Love, along with the Wilson brothers and Al Jardine, were the Beach Boys, great group of the 60s and 70s. And Mike Love was the vocalist in many of their songs, including California Girls and many of their other great songs of that era. So happy number 80. The rockers are getting old. The rockers are turning 80. And that... that just means, I guess, that all of us are also getting old. Mike Love, great voice, great group, the Beach Boys. Well, thank you for listening. Everybody have a wonderful day. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas. Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Tuesday, March the 14th. And welcome to our commentary. Our big topic today is going to be the new inflation report that just came out. This is the first one. There's another one, I think, coming out Friday or next week. So we're going to get into that, but I just want to point out a couple of things. I have a post over at the American Thinker on Tuesday morning about what is happening in Japan. You may be familiar with Japan. They're having a population problem. And what I mean by that is that they're not reproducing. They're not having enough babies. And now the prime minister is taking this very seriously, going directly to the people and basically telling them, we got to reproduce more. We got to have more babies. And the problem is obvious. When you don't have a sufficient reproduction, and that basically means two kids, 2.1 babies for every woman, your population doesn't keep up. So your population starts getting older. And that's what's happening in Japan. That's also happening in South Korea. That's happening in many, many countries in the world where the reproduction of the number of new babies is not enough to keep up with the population. And in the case of Japan, the prime minister is pointing out that, we're going to need younger workers to take care of the older workers. That's not going to happen. And we're also going to need younger workers to take the jobs, of course, that the country needs. And then, and he didn't say this, but I'll say this, you got to have younger workers because you got to defend your country. I mean, who's going to go in the army and defend your country? So it is a serious problem in Japan. And they're going to try to come up with incentives to get, people to have more children. The article that I read said that many young couples just don't want to have children because of housing issues, the cost of living, life in general. I don't know what the real problem is, but it is a problem. It is a problem when you have these distortions and your population growth, instead of having a country where the age groups are sort of evenly divided, naturally divided, that is, you have an older group and you've got a younger group and you've got this kind of a problem, and it does create significant social tensions, because the bottom line is you don't have enough young workers to support the older ones. So it does become a problem. Japan, South Korea is another case. So check out my post, The American Thinker, today, Tuesday morning. I've got a post coming out Wednesday morning about another story, and that is there is a Christian school up in Vermont, and it's a girls' school, and they decided not to play a game. They were going to play a game, some kind of a tournament, and they were going to play a game against a public school where there was a boy playing as a girl in the team. And the girls said, no, we're not going to play that. You know, we're not going to go against a team that has a boy instead of a girl. And that created a lot of controversy. The girls said, no, we'd rather quit the tournament than play that game. And they've been thrown out of the tournament by the school district or whatever. But this is, to me, an issue of common sense. You know, if you're going to start having boys play in lieu of girls, well, what's going to happen? You know, what's going to happen to the girl who loses her place on the team because a boy took over her place? Is that fair on the girls? I don't think so. Is that something that we should be talking about? Yes, we should be talking about this. I mean, the differences between boys and girls have nothing to do with civil rights. These are biology reasons. Boys are stronger than girls. They're taller. They're bigger. I mean, all you have to do is watch a soccer game, and you can see for yourself what I'm talking about, or a basketball game or volleyball game. You can see the differences, or swimming competitions. You can see the biological differences between men and girls. And in this particular case, I am really applauding these girls for taking that position. And I know they're going to catch a lot of heat. They've been thrown out of the tournament, but I applaud them. I applaud them for standing up for common sense. This is not a question of civil rights. This is common sense. You know, boys should not be playing in girls' teams. And I keep asking the question, who's going to, you know, what girl had to give up her place in order to have a boy play in her place? What scholarship was lost? What future, you know, trophy was lost by a girl because the boy took her place? I mean, it's an absolutely horrific situation. And I know that there are many states, Texas included, where they're going to be passing laws that say that you have to play sports in your gender of birth. In other words, if you're born a boy, you're going to play as a man and girl as a woman. And that's frankly the way it should be. Most states seem to be going in that direction, but there are still some where this issue is completely, completely confusing. And I applaud those girls in Vermont for standing up for principle, standing up for common sense, really, not just principle, but common sense. Congratulations to those girls. They're not going to be able to participate in the tournament, but they took a position of principle, and that's something you have to admire. Let's talk a little bit about inflation. The inflation report came out today. If you look at the overall inflation number, it's a little bit better than the last one. So, you know, it's not like we're going further south, but it's a little bit better, but there's still a long way to go. But when you look inside the numbers, this is where it really becomes a problem. For example, I made me some notes here. Food, the food we eat, that's plus 9%. If you eat at home, that's plus 10%. If you go out to eat, that's plus 8%. Energy overall, 5%. Now, there's an interesting thing there because the overall gasoline figure appears to be dropping a little bit. But the other costs, utilities, electricity, and all these other things are going up quite a bit. So heating your home goes up. Cooling your home goes up. Driving a car, maybe not so much. But still, it's an inflationary picture that the Biden administration is going to have to deal with. And the problem here is that the Fed is now, once again, going to have to consider raising interest rates to slow this down. But there's also the fear that that could hurt some of the banks. So it's a tough call. I mean, it's a very tough situation. But I keep saying it, that if you really want to do something about inflation, if you want to bring inflation down, if you really want to stop this, what you have to do is take control of the cost of energy. You've got to put a lot of petroleum out there. You've got to pump as much petroleum and energy as you can so that the cost of gasoline goes down. And when the cost of gasoline goes down, then of course, you're going to have a much better energy situation and, of course, a much better inflation situation. Because, you know, energy, gasoline, is what's driving a lot of this. You got to move everything in this country by gasoline or some kind of fuel, and most of the time it's a fossil fuel derivative. So that's what you got to do. You got to have a lot more energy, and you got to have more inventory, more petroleum. We've got all the petroleum in the world right here in the United States, here in Texas and Alaska and all of these other places. So let's go for it. I mean, let's do it for the country and pump as much energy as we can. We can do it cleanly, as we have shown here in Texas and in other places. We can do it cleanly, and we can at least bring some relief to the American family being torn up by the cost of energy. And energy, I continue to say, is really driving a lot of this inflation. Now, one thing that is interesting is that President Biden is going to be approving, if he hasn't approved it already, a big oil project up in Alaska. And this is upsetting some of his base, but it is something that has to be done. You know, we have to drill for more oil. And I'm glad to see that he's at least going in the right direction when it comes to that topic. Whether he will, you know, do more in the country as a whole, I don't know. But what he's doing in Alaska is at least an indication that, you know, there's a little common sense returning to the Oval Office. I feel very strongly that this administration made some big mistakes at the very beginning by going after fossil fuels the way they did, and they've created, to a large extent, the inflation that we are dealing with. So it's a good move on the part of the president. Go through with that. Go through with that. And not just approve oil projects in Alaska, approve them elsewhere so that we're pumping and we're putting a lot of energy out there in the marketplace so that the price of gasoline drops to about $2. I think if that were to happen, if gasoline were to come down from $3 to $2 here in the next year or so, I think you would see a huge drop in inflation at the same time. No question about that. Well, let me leave you today with a happy birthday. We're going to say happy birthday, happy number 95 to Frank Borman. If you're familiar with Apollo 8, Frank Borman was one of the three men who was part of that historic crew. They were the first crew to go around the moon, entered what they call the dark side of the moon. And they did it on December 24th, 1968, when they went around the moon, and then they spoke to the people back here in the country they spoke to us by radio, I guess, from up going around the moon. And Frank Borman, after this particular mission, after the Apollo 8 mission, he got out of the business, and he became the president of Eastern Airlines. I don't know, some of you may remember some of those commercials that he used to make back in the 1970s as the president of Eastern Airlines. So Frank Borman, one of the Wright Stuff, one of the original members of the Wright Stuff, you know, those early astronauts who took us to the moon, and one of the most historic missions, Apollo 8. So happy number 95 to Frank Borman. I'm not sure what he's doing now or where he lives, but I tell you, he left. He made a big impression when he was up in that Apollo 8, and then all those years that he was an executive at Eastern Airlines. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we'll talk to you later. Bye-bye, everybody.